Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
About. So easy. You gotta put it into perspective.
Quick question. Are we 100% on for today?
No, we're definitely on.
Oh.
100%.
Okay. No, I just double checking. Had a little moment of self-doubt there where it dawned on me what truly is about to happen, so. But no turning back, right?
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
V.I.G.
So police in one panhandle town, they're looking for a man that they've dubbed the Crapper Man, after a camera caught him defecating in public. The police chief is very angry about this, saying it really stinks when people don't give a crap about their town.
Why are you doing this? What is wrong with you?
Oh, no! Oh, you're naughty! And I see what you've done. What we call in this business, clever wordplay.
And now...
No, I don't have... When I listen to Never Would Play That.
Our feature presentation.
Right?
Whoa. Totally.
Not sure what that was either.
I agree.
Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It's Tuesday morning, the 13th of November.
Happy birthday to our good friend Jimmy Kimmel today.
Oh, how about that?
How about that? Hey, it's hard to think about anything but the fires right now.
Right.
And I do have an uplifting, happy story. But let me ask this question first.
Okay.
When you, and I guess the death toll now is officially close to 50 now in California. They keep saying 200 unaccounted for. Now, do you think a lot of those people are people who just went to hotels and stuff or went and drove away to other cities?
I mean,
or
I would hope
so. Because it's hard to, I mean, of course it's possible, but it's hard to imagine that there were 200 people that were just overcome and overwhelmed by flames moving that fast in towns like Paradise. I guess it's possible, but is that what they're, I mean, what do you guys think? What have you heard?
I think 95% of the deaths are in Paradise. Are up in Northern California.
Right, right.
But that whole town is decimated. The whole town is gone.
The whole town's gone, yeah.
So I wouldn't doubt that a lot of those people are missing because they're dead.
But then there's also, like, two families at our house. Mm-hmm. You had some people at your house.
Right.
So I don't know how
but
those people are counted.
That's counted. Down here. Okay. That up there, I mean... It's a very different way of life.
But there
up
were
there.
Certainly people who evacuated in Paradise. Though,
absolutely.
Who got the word. I mean, they went somewhere. But I guess the question is, by now, wouldn't they have figured out a way to call somebody, right?
Right.
I mean, that's just a... Every time... I mean, my skin crawls every time I hear 200 unaccounted for, you know? It's just... It's hard to fathom that level of death and destruction.
Yeah.
So I promised you a happy story, and this one comes from the Camp Fire. This is a man named Dane Cummings. He drives a trash truck. He works for waste management. And he was ordered to cut his route short because of the fire and head back, but he did not. He ignored his boss's direct order because he wanted to get to a part of town where he knew there were lots of older residents that might need help. He wanted to make sure everybody had gotten the word and had gotten out that this fire was coming and it was serious. And sure enough, he sees on the front porch of her house a 93-year-old woman named Margaret Newsom, whose caregiver was off for the day. And she was just sitting out on the porch. She had gotten up as usual, had some oatmeal, turned on the TV, saw there was a serious fire in Paradise, and she didn't know what to do. She doesn't have any family in the area, didn't know who to call. So she just was sitting out on her front porch with her two cats. And the trash guy comes by and says, "Not today, hop in." And apparently, by the
but
way,
first
they have...
we got to make like six stops. The trash has to be picked up.
And I got to talk to you about your recycling. You're not doing too great, Nana.
Seriously, you got to take the caps off the milk jugs. What are you doing? So she's 94 and fairly, 93, fairly frail. So he loads her up into the trash truck and off they go. And it was more than a 5-hour drive down the hill, down the mountain to get out of town because of the fires. Can you imagine how horrifying that was? And how we've seen so many videos on the news lately of people who are driving down a road and they're shooting, you know, they've either got a dash cam or they've got their phone up, and you see flames on both sides of the road closing in on them. You just can't believe they were able to make it through. There was a lot of that kind of white knuckle driving, getting this 93-year-old woman out. Hero, right? This guy.
Yeah.
Here's what's fascinating to me. And I think this is a bigger, this is even a bigger takeaway from the story, besides the fact that this Mr. Cummings is a goddamn hero for saving this woman's life.
Yeah, dating?
He does say that it was one of the best conversations he's ever had in his life. Aww. And he wished he had met her when he was younger. He would have married her.
Wow.
I think there's a real spark, a real love connection. She, for 5 hours, you're talking to this woman, by the way. And I know that's hell on earth for you, Kevin, to think about talking to an old person for 5 hours.
No, just driving behind one.
She told her entire life story, by the way, including how she had broken a bunch of bones while hang gliding at age 70.
Wow.
Including being with her future husband in the Marine Corps, living together on the water at Pearl Harbor when the attack came, the Japanese planes flying over so close she could see the pilots, she said. I mean, this is living history, right?
Wow.
She also told about the time she spent in Las Vegas as a backup singer, singing for Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., and Dean Martin.
She's making stuff up now.
No, she's just rad.
She has lived a life, right? She was a background singer. She said she was hired for a job and wasn't told who she would be singing with. She showed up at the interview, and there was Frank, Sammy, and Dean, and they said, "We're thrilled to have you working with us." And she was just speechless. She said it was one of the best times of her life. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I love old people, and if we take time to talk to old people, not everybody is going to be Margaret. But old people have stories to tell, and old people have lived a life, and old people have seen some stuff. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
And it's sad to think about all those stories every day that are dying with them, and we don't even know about them. So, I don't know. I just think everything about this story made me smile. The fact that he went out of his way to help a person, the fact that he was able to help a person, and the fact that it went so well for both of them. And I think that they are going to be, for however much longer Margaret has left, I think they are going to be friends, don't you?
I can just about walk. I can't hardly walk. I can't see too far, and I can't hear too good.
And there she is right there.
Do you think Margaret's doing great? Like sitting in the cab of that truck just going, you know what? All my stuff's going to be burned. They won't find anything. I can make anything up. She's like, here's what happened next.
Then I was knighted by the queen. Right. And then
I was a fighter pilot.
But that was after I came back from space, though. I mean,
I love her.
I hope we don't find out it's all dementia and none of this stuff ever happened. And she was born in that house and has never left it before. I hope that's not the story, because I like the story I read.
So do we. How does that come to your mind?
Well, because Allie said...
I'm so sorry for putting that out there.
Because Allie cast doubt on it, saying that maybe it wasn't true.
I was totally kidding. I bet all that stuff happened. Because Margaret is rad. But I do...
Agreed.
But what did concern me about your story was you just talked about all those people. How could it be true?
Mm-hmm.
That's a woman sitting on her porch just waiting for someone. There's a lot of old people in paradise.
Yeah, I'm
very concerned that that number might be... more right on target.
Yeah.
That makes me
too.
Real sad.
Well, that wasn't the intention.
It wasn't as up as we thought it was.
So I brought the story down twice? Cool.
You did.
All right.
You did. You killed it.
Let's talk about today's Kevin DeBicho, shall we?
Dumb. Mm-hmm.
Super dumb, right?
The dumbest.
Oh. Well, the early reviews are in.
Jesus.
We would like to talk to you if your neighbors called the cops on you.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out this has happened to me. I know that's a surprise.
I don't think that's ever happened to me.
I mean, yeah, you don't strike me as the kind of person who would do anything that the neighbors would complain about.
Right.
Yeah. You don't hear any noise coming out of my house after 8:30, so I can't imagine why they would call.
After 5:30, you mean. Allie, the dream interpreter today?
Oh, great.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
Brad, ooh, Allie, I need some help on a dream.
Uh-oh.
No.
Sorry, Chip.
Author Brad Meltzer will join us today.
Oh, we love Brad.
Love him so much.
He writes books faster than I can read them.
He does. That's true, yeah. We also have Bean Makes Us Guess. We have a man who, we're going to introduce you to a man who married a hologram.
Okay.
Married a hologram. And in the 6 o'clock hour, we've got your tickets for the K-Rock Almost to Christmas as well. So we'll take a break. We'll come back with what's happening next.
It's Kevin and Bean.
K-Rock. K-Rock.
Time for our very first look at what's happening here on this Tuesday morning. Hey, Allie.
Hey, Bean. Well, we all knew it was a matter of time before we lost the great Stan Lee. But yesterday was the day. The comic giant was taken by ambulance from his L.A. home to Cedars-Sinai, where he later passed away. The cause of death, not yet known, but he had been sick this past year with everything from pneumonia to the flu.
Yeah.
So when you're 95, as much as he was, you know, out and about and always just very lively, you get sick at that age, and that's usually a bad, bad sign.
It is hard to encapsulate the impact that somebody like Stan Lee made on the world over his 70-year career, isn't
Absolutely. It? Absolutely, yeah. He began at what was then Timely Comics in 1939. He made about $8 a week. And then over the years, he was a writer, editor, occasional illustrator. In the early 60s, he was asked to come up with a team of superheroes to compete against DC's Justice League because they were just number one. They were dominating everything. So Marvel revitalized the comic business with a series of flawed, yet more human superheroes. They lived in the real world, struggled with everyday challenges. First came the Fantastic Four, and then following that, they introduced characters such as Spider-Man, the Hulk, Iron Man, Thor, X-Men, Daredevil, and all of these new superheroes, all created between 1961 and 1964. Quite a creative burst. Quite a creative burst right then. Hugely.
You just name a couple of those and you go, okay, that's a career. Yeah. Like if you had just created Daredevil, that's enough. But then you add, you know, the Black Panther and everybody else that he created. It's just, it's amazing how much came out of one man's mind.
Yeah. Well, those ones, just in that short amount of time, allowed Marvel to surpass DC. And they haven't really looked back, really.
No, they haven't.
Have they? Yeah. But it wasn't all joy for Stan Lee. Through the success of the movies and making the characters worth billions, Stan Lee maintained that he saw very little of that wealth. In 2002, he sued Marvel for royalties he said he was owed for Spider-Man. He settled for $10 million. And then in 2009, the Walt Disney Company bought Marvel for $4 billion. Yeah.
Wow.
And then it seemed like the hits just kept coming for him because in July 2017, he lost his beloved wife, Joan. They were married for 69 years, you guys. He sued executives at POW Entertainment, a company that he founded in 2001. And then he rescinded that. And then all that stuff with all of his kind of, I don't even want to call them close circle because it seemed like a lot of them were using him and maybe swaying him in ways that they shouldn't have been. So
it seemed like there was some elder financial abuse.
Absolutely. He sued his ex-manager, filed a restraining order against him. It just all took a lot of really sad turns this past
year.
You can
make anything ugly today.
What?
Wow. Well,
Allie.
It's part of his story.
I know.
It really is. So, but I don't know if you saw online, I mean, everybody that has ever been in a superhero, watched a superhero movie, anyone basically with a pulse was sending out their thoughts on him. And the thing that struck me was how many people across the board, we're talking from actors to writers to people at comic cons to just some dude walking down the street, how many people had pictures with Stan Lee, which speaks to how accessible he was and how just kind, and he always seemed to have a moment for other people, which is a lovely thing.
And not a given really for all celebrities.
Oh, absolutely not.
No one had more fun at Comic-Con than Stan Lee, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
And even the times we've had him on this show over the many years we've been talking to Stan, I mean, was anyone more excited about whatever it was he was talking about than Stan Lee?
No.
You would think he would be over it after 70 years, but every day he seemed to wake up and be energized and excited and just grateful to be able to do the work he loved.
I think the last time we had him on was a couple years ago. And my God, you think to yourself before you go into the phone, 93-year-old man.
Right.
This might not.
We should talk slowly.
Great. Like, what do we do? And he's just like, hey, guys, how's everyone doing?
Right.
Like, what the hell?
And then
why?
I was like, he should talk slowly for me. Right. I'm having
Stan,
trouble keeping up.
You could slow it down for Kevin. That would be beneficial to all of us. But
now, I did hear that he already filmed his Avengers 4 cameo, though. So we do at least have one more of those to look forward to on the big screen.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, rest in peace to Stan Lee. And I don't know what you believe, but it does make me feel a little bit better that he's possibly somewhere with his beloved wife. Did I make it better, Bean?
Yeah, that was a nice hopeful note. I mean, it's not true, but it was a nice hopeful note.
Worst.
I mean, sad, but yeah, good effort.
Okay, all right. I mean, I'll take it from you. I'll take it from you today.
Fail, but you tried.
Right.
Great job. Good effort. This is a kind of a funny story. Fans have noticed that Kate Middleton and Prince William have been more, well, let's just say into each other as of late. And royal watchers are saying maybe it's because they're watching Prince Harry and Meghan Markle be a little bit more hand-holdy and touchy, and they're like, let's step it up, guys.
Really? Do you think they're stepping it up?
Can you imagine? Here is what body language expert Judy James told the Daily Mail. This is my favorite quote. It's unusual to see William taking the lead in terms of public touch rituals. But on Remembrance Sunday, he performed the back touch ritual, even splaying his thumb out to signal a rather protective form of affection. Back touch ritual?
What?
He's rubbing his wife's back. Just say that, you weirdos. God damn. Splaying his thumb out to signal a rather protective form of affection. He's rubbing her back. If he does it with a fist, he's a creep. He's rubbing her back. Have these people never touched anyone?
I don't know, but the magnifying glass those royal family members live
imagine.
Under must be hell.
Wouldn't it be
a lot
awesome?
A lot of advantages to being in the royal family. That's a real disadvantage.
Wouldn't it be awesome, though, if just one day Prince William is just like, listen, I'm going to hump your leg and just, like, pretend you don't notice it. I'm just going to hump your leg. Let's see how the world reacts. Oh, it would be the greatest.
That would be the greatest. I agree.
And then they just deny it. What are you talking about?
That never happened.
That never happened.
Ridiculous.
I love it.
Oh, some birthdays for you guys. Whoopi Goldberg, Gerard Butler, Jimmy Kimmel. Whatever happened.
Yay!
What's that?
Whatever happened to that guy?
I don't know. No? Homeless, I think.
I know.
I lost track of him after the man show.
Yeah, that's sad. And Meta World Peace. And that's what's happening.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show. K-Rock.
Throughout the years here on the Kevin and Bean Show, we have brought you many stories of people who have just been desperate to be married. We had that woman who married herself a couple of years ago,
yes.
Remember?
Yeah.
Had a whole ceremony for herself.
Well, how's she's doing?
I hope they didn't split up. Just last week, we brought you the lady who married a tree.
Yeah,
for instance. There are some people who just want to be married. Mm-hmm. And Kahiko Kondo is one of those. Although he has been in love with this woman for 10 years, he just got married. She's a virtual reality singer, by the way. And in Japan, they were way ahead of us on the AI. You know, we're starting to see more and more AI. But Japan, they have had these pop superstars over there who do not exist. They are just virtual reality. And they have enormous followings and sell millions of records. And they have movies. And
who
they have
does
dolls.
The,
and they have fan clubs.
Who does the actual singing and writing of songs and all that stuff?
Oh, I'm sure it's
someone
just studio.
Behind the scenes?
Yeah, just behind the scenes studio musician. But they create these personas, which I'm sure the music industry over there goes, hey, this is great. We never have to worry about this singer, you know, running out of hits or, you know, embarrassing us.
Right.
Not showing up. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're so far ahead of us with this technology. And this guy, Mr. Kondo, just fell in love with this singer about 10 years ago. Her name is Hatsune Miku. And he just had a wedding. He married his virtual reality girlfriend, as he calls her.
Okay. How does that work?
My question is, do you think, like, when a lot of people become unattainable sex symbols, they try to keep their private life private?
Right.
So if you find out that somebody's married, maybe that lessens your interest in them. Like, oh, now they're married. They'd never marry me. What if he's now taking away the dreams of so many other people? She becomes just destitute because no one's buying her stuff anymore. This is horrible.
It's a hologram. You know that, right?
Wait, what?
But no, but Allie's making a really good point. There's a reason why the One Direction guys or whatever, when they get married, they keep it on the down low because they want to keep that fantasy alive for their female fans. So, yeah, you're right. What's this going to do for her? For Miku-san, right?
I'm very concerned.
I'm very concerned about the 40 guests that showed up at the wedding.
Yes.
That, to me, seems like a lot of enabling going on.
Yes.
Instead of a lot of 40 people saying, hey, listen, Akihito, no, you're not marrying a hologram, all right? The wedding cost around $17,000.
What?
Wow.
She ate a ton.
Right.
She tied the knot with Miku, who, by the way, of course, couldn't be there because she's, you know, virtual reality.
Sure.
So she appeared in the form of a cat-sized stuffed doll, which, by the way, is the same doll that he took to buy the engagement ring. He took the doll into a jewelry store to buy a ring that she wears around the doll's arm.
This is a beautiful love story.
Mm. I've never cheated on her. I've always been in love with Miku-san, shocking. He said. I've been thinking about her every day, he says. He also considers himself an ordinary married man. His holographic wife wakes him up each morning and sends him off to his job as an administrator at a school. Now, should he be around children?
Oh, no.
In the evening, when he tells her by cell phone that he's coming home, she turns on the lights. Later, she tells him when it's time to go to bed. Now, there aren't enough details in the story to let me know how that happens. Is she, like, tied into his Alexa or something?
Yeah.
I would assume so.
Absolutely. She sounds like an alarm clock.
Right.
And something that can turn on the lights, turn on the sprinklers, do all that.
Right. She's a virtual assistant.
She's a slave, really.
Yeah, right. He's hired this woman just so he can get her to do all his work for him.
Married. You said hired. It's married.
Oh, sorry. Married, yes. He sleeps alongside the doll version of her that attended the wedding, complete with the wedding ring that fits around her left wrist. I don't want to know beyond the sleeping. I don't want to know how that works.
You do want to know.
This will surprise you. Gatebox, which is the company that makes the virtual reality singer, says that they have issued more than 3,000 certificates for cross-dimension marriages.
What? For her?
It doesn't say.
I imagine. Their characters?
I would imagine among all of their characters. This guy's not the only crazy one who wants to marry a hologram, you guys. Like we thought when we saw the article.
Yeah,
they have
one dude who has lost it.
Yes.
How many?
Now, here. Over 3,000. Oh, cross-dimension marriages, they're called. He says he's getting a tremendous amount of support, by the way, and he's happy to be he's happy to be the face of the movement. He's trying to help people. Look, if you want to have a wedding, have a wedding. I did it. You can do it. Here's where it starts to get weird.
It's getting weird.
Here.
Okay.
Because I was thinking the man was just maybe a little eccentric or something.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, his path to Miku came after difficult encounters with women. Girls would say, "Drop dead, creepy otaku," he recalled, using a Japanese term for geeks that can carry a negative connotation. Then as he got older, he says a woman at a previous workplace bullied him into a nervous breakdown, and he became determined to never marry.
Hold on. So you're saying that a guy who married a hologram had problems with women?
Apparently so. Apparently that is where this came from. This will surprise you, by the way, that in Japan, 1 in 4 men at 50 years old has never been married. 25% of men at 50 have never been married, which is also a surprise to me.
But is this guy married? I mean, he married a hologram, for God's sakes. Yeah. Does that count as married?
I don't think it would have legal standing.
Right.
I don't, yeah. Miku-san is the woman I love a lot, wrapping up now, and also the one who saved me. Although he is happy to be with his 3D woman, he says he has no interest in romance with another one, no matter how much his mother pushes for him. Two-dimensional characters can't cheat, age, or die, he points out.
Oof.
I'm not seeking these in real women. It's impossible.
Someone's been hurt.
He says trying to get him to marry a flesh and blood woman is not right. It would be as if you were trying to talk a gay man into dating a woman or a lesbian into a relationship with a man. So he thinks he has found the perfect partner for him, and I think he's right.
I don't think
he's going to do better.
Are they able to?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, he has the doll. Right. But, and then the virtual reality that sits on his desk, by the way, that costs $2,800, the little virtual reality hologram. Mm. So, look, if he's happy,
sure,
I guess we say more power to you, right? Go for it.
Listen, if a dude is going to be married to a hologram and not killing women because he's mad that women don't like him,
mm-hmm.
marry all the holograms. Do it.
Do it.
More than one, you're saying.
Stay off the incel websites. Uh-huh. Just deal with your little hologram lady. Have her turn on the sprinklers, turn on the lights, maybe heat something up in the microwave. More power to you, sir. God bless you.
It's Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
All right, you guys. Let me just say.
Don't shoot the messenger.
No, I'm just telling you.
You picked a bad list, didn't you?
It's a great list, but it's going to be controversial, and here's why. Well, let's do the big intro first. It's time for Bean Makes His Guess.
Bean makes his guess, yeah.
Ooh.
Bean makes his guess, yeah.
Who gets penis slapped?
Bean is a dick.
Pretty dope, man.
Just want to tell ya.
I am the dumbest human that ever lived.
Now it's time for Bean Makes His Guess.
Yes. It is the most wonderful time of the year, and we're thinking holidays, and we're thinking holiday movies. And this list is about the best Christmas movies since 1990, okay? The best Christmas movies since 1990. Now, the thing I want to point out is there are two kinds of Christmas movies. There are movies that are about Christmas, and there are movies that are set at Christmas time. For instance, Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
I already wrote Die Hard on my piece of paper.
it came out before 1990, so it wouldn't be eligible anyway. But second of all, it's not a Christmas movie. It's a movie that's set at Christmas, okay? Yeah. It's a Wonderful Life is not a Christmas movie. It's a movie that has the climactic scene at Christmas time.
What?
Seems very picky. Christmas movie.
That's what I thought.
How dare you?
It's not a Christmas movie.
How are we supposed to guess if you're changing all the definitions on this?
Yeah, I'm not changing any definitions because you guys will be happy to know that Entertainment Weekly, who put this list together, counts movies that are set at Christmas time. So it includes both. It includes Christmas movies and movies that have scenes at Christmas time, okay? So this is, again, the best Christmas movies since 1990. So you're not going to have all your old black and white movies that you grew up watching on TV. These are all going to be in the last 28 years. And Kevin, historically, you are sitting at the head of the table. You get to go first. Die Hard is too early, so that's not on here. But what say you is your first guess?
Debbie Does Dallas. At Christmas.
Yes.
Oh, that did not make the list. I'm sorry. I meant to hit that one.
I think that was Debbie Does the North Pole.
Right. Sorry. Shoot.
Oh, nice. Who's next? Is it Muggs is next?
Sure, I'll go next.
All right.
Gotta be Home Alone.
Yeah, Home Alone is a great guess. Home Alone is number three on the list of the best Christmas movies since 1990. Well done, Muggs. You are on the board. Miss Allie McKay.
Elf.
Of course, number one, ladies and gentlemen, is Elf.
As it should be.
Is there any doubt, right? Kevin, you're up.
I'm going to say Christmas movie, Christmas. Saw.
At Christmas.
Saw St. Nick. I mean, that's the whole title.
You know what? It might have been just outside the top 10. I'm sorry.
So close.
Saw did not make the list. Muggsy.
My favorite movie of all time. My number one. Scrooged.
That's your number one.
Too early.
Yeah.
80s. What? Yeah.
Oh, darn it. 80s. It was the 80s.
That's your number one movie of all time?
It's a Christmas movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, oof. 1990 and
how
beyond.
How did I screw up on that?
How'd you screw up?
Because your beer mug. Right? Alan McKay.
Dumb. Love Actually.
Well, it's number two on the list. Right. Kevin, how did you enjoy Love Actually when you watched
so
it over
good
the weekend?
Because he said, I really like you. And she said, it's love. Actually,
it's not like that at all.
Well done.
Thank you.
Kevin, you know it has Claudia Schiffer in it, right?
Oh, I didn't know
Shannon
that.
Shannon Elizabeth, Denise Richards, Alicia Cuthbert.
Stop
January
yelling
Jones
at me about that movie.
I'm just saying, what else does it take?
I had a guy on Twitter who's like, look, I'm going to take the bullet for you. I'm going to watch the movie and I'll give you a review. And then he wrote back, don't watch. It's fine. You're good. Don't worry about it.
How dare you.
So I'm out.
All right. Whose turn is it?
My turn. Bad Santa.
Bad Santa, I'm sorry, is number 22 on the list. And by the way, that's an outrage. That should be a lot higher, I think, in terms of Christmas movies from the 1990 and beyond. Miss Allie McKay.
The Grinch.
How the Grinch Stole Christmas, number six. Yeah, directed by Ron Howard, starring Jim Carrey, number six on the list. Well done. Kevin.
I'm going to say Christmas Vacation.
Too early.
Again, way too early. That's another 80s movie.
What about...
We're talking about 1990 and beyond.
I'm not good at this game.
Jingle All the Way.
Jingle All the Way is number 17 on the list. You don't get a point, but great guess. That was the Arnold Schwarzenegger Sinbad movie. Do you remember what the toy was that he was in pursuit of during that movie?
Turbo Man!
Turbo Man, indeed. Well done.
That's why I used the word Sinbad in a long, long time.
Miss Allie McKay.
Listen.
Nope.
Say it.
Nope.
Don't say it.
The mother effing holiday.
Number seven. Number seven.
Yes.
That's Kate Winslet and Cameron Diaz. Allie, how
Jack
would you
Black.
Rank? And Jack Black, too. How would you rank that among your favorite movies of any genre of all time?
I love The Holiday so much.
You
it's
do.
Ridiculous.
Too much.
Someone's talking about The Holiday. The Holiday is the movie version of her Peaky Blinders line, right? So that is number seven. I think Allie may be winning this game, you guys.
I've got four.
Let's go around one more time.
All right. Kevin, you're up.
You have how many? Four? All right, I'm going to get three with the Santa Claus one. Two
nice.
And three.
Oh, all right.
Boom!
Well, you can only take a one guess, I'm sorry. But the Santa Claus, Tim Allen, 1994, is number 11. Oh, I'm sorry. It's number 11 on the list, just outside the top 10. I'm sorry. By the way, I never saw it, but apparently that's a really good movie.
It is a really good movie.
Tim Allen. I mean, the sequels were not so much, but the first one was real good.
It's mostly for kids, but it's well done.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Muggs, your final guess, please.
I'm going to go with Miracle on 34th Street, the remake.
Number 20 on the list. That was directed by John Hughes, starring Richard Attenborough as Santa Claus. That's a great movie right there. Allie, your final guess, please.
Can we just go with a sequel to Home Alone?
You mean number 9, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York?
Damn Mother it.
Co-starring
efforts.
President Donald Trump. Is that what you mean?
Oh.
He has a clause, by the way, if you film anything
Santa
at Trump.
Santa Claus?
No. Donald Trump has a clause. If you film anything at Trump Tower, he has to be written into the movie.
But it was in that scene, they were in the Plaza Hotel.
That's fine. But they also filmed at Trump Tower, so he had to be in the movie.
That's dumb.
All right, here's
the mug's getting all picky.
Here's the top 10, you guys. Number 10, and again, this is in the category of movies that have a lot of Christmas in them, but they're not considered a Christmas movie. Sleepless in Seattle was number 10, which opens on Christmas Eve.
You could have given me a million guesses.
I would have said that's more of a New Year's movie.
Home Alone 2 was number 9. You've Got Mail, number 8.
Again, no.
You've Got Mail.
Watch it again. Lots of Christmas in there. Caroling, singing, Christmas trees, the whole works. Number 7, The Holiday. Number 6, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Number 5, it surprised me that nobody thought of our good friend Tim Burton and Danny Elfman with The Nightmare Before Christmas.
That was dumb. Yeah. We are horrible.
Chip wrote down for me Nightmare Before Christmas and Saw. So I pick Saw.
You pick
Saw.
Well
done. Well done.
Number 4, Allie, I know you loved Bridget Jones's Diary. Hugh Grant, Colin Firth, Renee Zellweger, all about Christmas. And then Home Alone, Love Actually, and Elf. So there you go. The best Christmas movie since 1990, according to Entertainment Weekly. This has been Bean Makes Us Guess.
Bean Makes Us Guess, yeah.
It's Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
Night number 2 of the K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas, December 9th at the Forum. Tickets on sale now through Ticketmaster. Not many left, but get them. Florence and the Machine, Death Cab for Cutie, Bastille, Mike Shinoda, Billie Eilish, Young the Giant, Churches, Mike Posner, and Lovely the Band. That's your lineup. Guess who's going to be singing the songs for our contestants? All they have to do is identify them by title and artist.
Please don't say Omar.
I'm sorry to say it's time for Omaroki. Hit it, Steve.
Maroki as a singer, Omar's really lame. So we wish you luck, because he sucks. If you guess, you win the game.
All right, so you're going to be singing one of the big hits from one of the bands playing Night 2. All the person on the phone has to do is tell you who it is and what the song is called.
Night number 2, baby, my favorite night, because it's 2.
I got to tell you that. I got to tell you, Omar, more than most times, says, I'm not sure this is going to go well.
I'm going to kill it, guys. I'm pretty sure.
All right, let's start with Erica in Corona. Hi.
Oh, my gosh. Hi.
Hi, Erica. All right. This is going to be very painful, but you only have to endure it for a few seconds. Omar is going to sing. You tell us title and artist of the song that you'll be singing at Night 2 if you win, okay?
Okay.
Good luck.
All of his questions, such a mournful sound. Tonight I'm going to bury that horse in the ground. So I'll keep my issues drawn, but it's always darkest before the dawn.
Oh, wow.
Have you heard that song?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sounds just
what
like
do you think, Erica?
Erica?
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Oh, darkest. I recognize the words, but I can't even figure out what it is.
That's not going to help you, my dear. I'm sorry to say. We were actually looking for Florence and the Machine. Shake
no,
it out.
No, it wasn't. Was it?
Can we hear some of that?
It's always darkest before the dawn.
Is that what you were doing? That's what you were doing?
That's exactly what I was doing.
Oh, Erica, there's
that's what
no
you were
way
doing.
That was not a success, but we got plenty more contestants on the line.
Jimmy in Rancho Cucamonga. Hi.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Morning, Jimmy. You know how the game is played. Listen up. Here's Omar.
Life's too short to even care at all. Whoa. I'm losing my mind, losing control. Whoa. These fishes in the sea, they're staring at me. Whoa.
Okay, that's fine.
A wet that's world that's aches for a okay beat of a drum. Whoa. Okay.
That's fine. Jimmy, put us out of our misery. Who is that? Title and artist, please.
Oh, gosh.
Right?
Name of the band and the song.
Duty?
I didn't hear what you said, but it wasn't right.
It was I heard Duty.
Yeah.
That was a you go.
Death Cab for Cutie.
Right. Or Young the Giant doing cough syrup.
Whoa.
You can't sing along with them when they sing now. That's not cool. All right, Allie in San Gabriel. Hi.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Well, we apologize in advance for what's about to happen.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Here we go.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I met you late night at a party, some trust fund babies, Brooklyn loft, by the bathroom. You said, let's talk, but my confidence is wearing off.
All right, good, Allie. What do you think?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Title and artist.
You got a guess?
Oh, my gosh. God, I hear this every day.
It was Broken by Lovely the Band.
I miss you late night at a party.
Stop
so
it.
Good.
You don't sound
so
anything
good
like that.
Just like that.
Hey, how do you guys feel it's going?
Well, I mean, we have no one qualified.
Okay, all right.
If that's what
the
you're
goal
saying
or that's not the
that
goal?
Is, the goal is to have people qualified.
I mean, I see.
Yes.
All right. So we're upside down a little bit right now.
Let's go to Canoga Park and say hi to Joe. Good morning.
Morning, guys.
Joe, what do you think as you've been listening on hold? Would you have gotten any of the previous ones?
I got the first two, but I don't know now. I'm probably going to miss this one.
Oh, nah, you got this, Joe. You got this.
You sound like a good contestant.
He's not worried about him, Omar.
Here's so.
All right.
Because in my head, there's a Greyhound station where I send my thoughts to a far-off destination so they may have a chance of finding a place
I
where
that's plenty. That's
they're
enough
far more suited than here. Ba, 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 da, ba,
okay,
ba.
All right, thank you.
Ba,
ba, thank you.
Ba, da, ba, ba, da,
all right,
ba,
I mean,
ba.
Joe, redeem yourself.
I could almost recognize that song.
Really?
I'm looking at the answer.
You're doing better than I am,
man. Is that Clear as Blue?
I don't even know what that is.
Sorry.
It's Soul Meets Body by Def Cab for Cutie.
Because in my head, there's a Greyhound station.
This is going well, guys.
I don't feel like it is.
I'm pretty sure it's in the screening, you know?
I think the contestants.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
All right.
Are we in sudden death mode yet?
Oh, yeah,
I don't
totally
think yet.
No, I don't think yet.
No,
okay,
not yet.
All right. All right, who's next?
John in Arcadia. Hi.
Hey.
Good luck.
In the in the dying light, I'm the only one here, and I will cover you until you go, whoa, whoa, oh. Because if I told the truth, I'll always be free, and I keep a prize with me until you go, whoa, whoa, oh.
John, obviously, Omar has never heard that song, but what do you think it is?
I have no idea. I want to say, is that like a Mike Shinoda song?
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
I got nothing.
Really?
No. Nothing.
No, that was that's The Mother We Share by Churches.
In the dying light, I'm the only one here.
No.
Okay. See, he sings along with it as if that's what he did last time.
Sudden death, you guys.
All right, sudden death.
It's got to be, right? You get it, you win.
Yeah.
And we're still not going to get a winner. All right. Let's go to Travis in Irvine. Hi, Travis.
Yeah, I'm not going to win this thing, just letting you know.
Well, we appreciate the honesty, but let's see how it goes.
You got this. You got this. Okay, here we go.
I was left to my own devices. Many days fell away with nothing to show. And the walls kept tumbling down in the city that we love.
All right, good. Thank you.
Clouds rolling over the hills, bringing the darkness from above.
Why he has to sing it like Morrissey. I don't understand that. But Travis,
hey,
title, and
original
artist,
guy.
Title and artist, and you're right. Going to night number two.
Best sounds like the theme song from Les Miserables.
Unfortunately, it was Bastille and their big, big K-Rock hit called Pompeii.
I was left to my...
My version's way better.
I'm sorry?
My version's way better.
I don't think that's the case.
I think I should cover that song.
All right. Still in sudden death.
Okay.
Let's go to Joshua in Alhambra. Hi.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. Here we
Joshua,
go.
Joshua, we are counting on you, man. Save us. Save this segment. Win the tickets. Will you?
All right. I'll do my best. Let's do
okay.
it.
Okay. Hey, and by the way, here's a hint.
Hey!
Here's
an
a
artist
hint.
Over here trying to kill it, man.
I understand that. Think about who's on the lineup, and then think about the ones we've already played. No repeats, okay? So you can already rule out Florence and Lovely the Band and Def Cab and all the rest. So think about who's left, and here's Omar.
You say, come over here, baby. I think you're pretty. I'm okay. I'm not your baby. If you think I'm pretty.
Why can't any of you guys look at me in the face when I'm singing?
Because it's so
I'm
bad.
Too sexy,
oh,
right?
It's so bad.
Okay.
Joshua?
Mike Posner?
Sorry. That's Billy Idol.
Billy Eilish.
You say, come over, baby.
So, so we have none.
Yeah.
So I have no people on hold.
Yeah.
But we can clear the lines and take caller 20, though. We can do that.
After all that,
yeah.
We torture people.
You're welcome.
All right. We're going to clear the lines. 1-800-520-1067. Caller 20. Good luck.
Oh, Maroki, that's our game, and how much fun we had. Now you know that I didn't lie when I told you he was pretty bad.
Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
First, though, it is Book Club Tuesday, as you told your friend yesterday, Allie. although the only author we really like is Brad Meltzer, and he is back on the phone here on K-Rock. Hey, Brad, how are you, man?
This is like the home. You know, you understand that today they were like, I'm not doing a tour. I'm not doing anything. I said, I'm just literally calling. The only place I love is three places, and you know this is coming home to me.
Well, thank you, Brad. I appreciate that. And before we get into the new book and catch up with all things Meltzer, I wanted to say a lot of action on your Twitter page yesterday. You were deeply affected by the loss of Stan Lee, who seems to be one of those guys that kind of represents the best of all of us that you're always talking to us about.
Yeah, no. I mean, listen, I knew the guy, he affected my life. He gave me my belief system, like cornerstones of my creed and principles that I follow and live by. And, it wasn't about, wearing long underwear or punching Doc Ock in the face. It was that his creations taught me that you should be good. Remember when that was enough just to be good for being good? And like, I think as a country, we're better at fighting. We know how to fight better than ever. But when you fight for yourself and you fight for power or money, you've already lost. And I love that I can still use that lesson that Stanley gave me when I was 10 to put good and use my creativity to put good into the world. And that's what I aspire to this very day.
And there were a lot of people yesterday who were pointing out that he was ahead of the curve in many cases on social justice issues. He had very powerful comics about, anti-racism, when not everybody was on board with that. And you're right. He really was a beacon for a lot of people, for a lot of goodness.
Oh man! I mean, let me read you because it's just worth doing. This is one of his soapboxes that he wrote in like the '60s, and he said, racism, and this is in the back of the comic book. He said, bigotry and racism are among the deadliest social ills plaguing the world today, and then he talks about how like You know, if your hang-up is a black man, you hate all black men. And then listen to this one. Think of it where we are today. If some foreigner beat him to a job, he's down on all foreigners. He hates power he's never seen, people he's never known with equal intensity and equal venom. And then he says, sooner or later, if you're ever to reach, if man's ever to be worthy of his destiny, you must fill your heart with tolerance. And only then will we be the man that was created in the image of God, a God who calls all of us his children.
Wow. Like,
that is Stan Lee. That's in the back of a friggin' Fantastic Four comic book. Well, you know, and I love the fact that he was like, you know, that's why you got Black Panther. That's why you got the X-Men. They weren't just there to punch people in the face, but they were there to show you that there are people who are different than you. And that's a beautiful thing, not something to be hated.
That is so beautifully put. I'm glad you shared that with us, Brad. Is Stan Lee the type of person who could be a candidate for one of your future I Am books?
Of course. Listen, you better believe it. I mean, everywhere on Twitter yesterday was like, you doing I Am Stan Lee? I'm like, are you kidding me? Of course I want to do him. The guy, you know, gave us not just Spider-Man. You know, and let me just talk about him. My favorite Spider-Man scene ever is this moment. I think it's number 33. And Spider-Man's trapped under a building. And he can't get out. And Aunt May's about to die. But the whole building is on top of him. And he's like screaming for help. And he's like, I'm not strong enough to get out of this. And he realizes no one's coming to help him. And panel after panel, he's just like, no one's coming. And he finally is like, I have to get out myself. And he just, for panel after panel, pushes his way and says, you have to save yourself. You have to do it when it's hard. And I read it with my young son last night. And I hope he got that message. That this isn't a message about Spider-Man. This is a message for all of us about life. Is that when you need help, when we're in that hole, because we're all in a hole at some point in time, you gotta find the hero in yourself. That's where the hero is. And
I want Brad to start reading to me at night, you guys.
I want Brad in my pocket forever. Just I want to keep him safe.
We mentioned the I Am series, the series of best-selling biographies about heroes that you've been doing. You're up to number 16 now, and today is a very big day for you because you have said that the number one question you get asked all the time is, when are you going to do a Latina, Hispanic character? And the book is out today. Tell us about it. Who'd you choose?
Yeah, so we looked long and hard. My sister-in-law is Latina. She's basically what they call in Miami. She's part Jewish, part Cuban. They call them Jubans here. And she, I'm not even joking, right? So it's great. But she helped me pick it out. We're doing I Am Sonia Sotomayor, the Supreme Court Justice, the first Hispanic Supreme Court Justice. And what I love about her story, as in all these stories, is she's, you know, is the human side, right? Well, none of us are getting to the Supreme Court. Maybe Kevin is, but like,
right?
Right? I mean, as defendants, right? We'll get there. That's how we'll get there. But the reality is, you know, when she's younger, she's like this crazy girl that runs around. They used to call her when she was little the Aji, which means hot pepper, because she couldn't sit still. Or, you know, you put a bow in her hair and it would just go flying. She got her head stuck in a bucket when she was trying to hear what her voice sounded like inside. That's like the definition of insanely cool to me. Like, you know, and she's just like, you put your head in a bucket and you get stuck. And what happens is she dreams. She used to read Nancy Drew and wanted to grow up to be Nancy Drew and be a detective and a police officer. And what she eventually gets diagnosed with is diabetes when she's 9 years old. Wow. And when she's reading about her diabetes, it tells her that you can't be a police officer. You'll never be one because diabetes won't let you be. And obviously not true anymore, but when she's younger, that's what they tell her. And she's watching Perry Mason, and she's like, I need a new dream. I can't be Nancy Drew. But she sees on Perry Mason that no matter what Perry Mason wants to do in the courtroom, the judge has to weigh in first. You don't do anything without the judge weighing in.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets a chance. She goes to a mom saves money. She's from poor area in the Bronx, saves money, and gets her to a private school. And then she makes her way to Princeton. And this is the best part, is she actually at Princeton succeeds so hard, so well, that she becomes Phi Beta Kappa. And she almost throws the invitation away because she thinks it's a fake jewelry scam, Phi Beta Kappa. Which is like the best, right? And at the end of the day, the reason I love Sonia Sotomayor and the reason the story resonates is, again, I'm not going to be a Supreme Court justice, but it's my story. And I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my family, when I was 13 years old, lost everything. They had, my dad lost his job, and he had $1,200 to his name, and it was, you know, had no place to live, no job. And it wasn't a moment where you're scared about money. We were frightened about safety. Right. We were worried.
Right.
And we moved down to Florida. My parents gave a fake address so I could go to the local wealthy public school that I never should have gone to. And it was there I saw this opportunity, college, to escape, to get out. And that was her story. She got to Princeton and looked around and was like, oh, my gosh, the world is so much bigger than I thought. You know, but to me, we all need that lesson that when you get to wherever you're going to, the first thing she always says is you thank those who come before you. And all of us have had someone who gave us our first real job, someone who told us we were good at something for the first time. Like, think of that person right now when you're done listening here. And listen, I hope you buy the book. God bless. But when you're done with it, go thank that person who took the first chance on you. It will pay you back forever. That's the lesson of I Am Sonia Sotomayor.
How do you, as her in her childhood, it seems like she was very poor. How do you get your head around the fact that someday I might be a Supreme Court justice? Or did she not at that point?
Yeah, no, she doesn't at all. She doesn't even think, you know, when they tell her to go to college, one of the coaches says to her, you should apply to Harvard. You should apply to Princeton. And she thinks she's going to like a local school. And she's like, I can't go there. My parents never even went to college. Her parents didn't even speak English.
Wow.
English is her second language. But this coach says, try. And her grandmother used to read her this poem that said, if you want to get what you want, you must dream it. And so what are you doing? She's like, I'm going to go apply to Princeton.
Wow, sure.
And she, you know, she becomes the valedictorian. She wins all these awards. She wins the highest honor at Princeton. But again, it's just because someone says you can do it. And again, you pay that forward forever.
We are talking to our friend Brad Meltzer on the phone, number one New York Times bestselling author. His latest book is out today called I Am Sonia Sotomayor. And by the way, our listeners always hit up Brad on social media and say, I bought every one of these books and my kids love them. We recommend everyone in the series. Final question for me, Brad. You've written so many of these books about people who are no longer with us, your Lincolns and your Einsteins and your Neil Armstrongs. You're writing about someone who's alive and accessible probably to you. Have you met with the justice?
You know, it's funny. The three that we're doing that are alive, we did I Am Jane Goodall, and she helped us with the book. The next one that's coming in February, is I Am Billie Jean King, and I spent hours on the phone with her. She's so amazing. The justice actually can't endorse any product. So we sent it to her office. It went to the Supreme Court. We heard back really, we were thrilled with what they said, but she can't weigh in. She's not allowed. But what I love is someone already sent me a picture where they took the book. The book is out today, and they gave it to the justice. And I just love that she's alive and seen this. And there's little girls and little boys around the country going like, this is you, and here you go. And so I just love that she has to deal with all of our nonsense now.
Brad, can I just take a second and just thank you for doing books on a Rosa Parks, on a Justice Sotomayor, people that maybe aren't looked at for these books and that little kids can see themselves in, that don't have a lot of representation. I think that is such a beautiful, wonderful thing for you to do.
No, and listen, that was my niece and nephew. I was like, that's what they need. And the lesson of the book, and I'll leave you with this. This is the lesson in the back. It says, whether it's in English, Spanish, or any other language, our dreams are often the same. A loving family, kind friends, a safe place to call home, and the chance to reach our potential. So no matter where you're born, there's no limit to what you can accomplish. And my God, look where the world is today. Look how much we hate anything that's different from us. And the idea that we're taking these books and the whole I Am series, and we're arming this little army of little kids out there with messages of tolerance. You know, that's what Stanley gave me when I was 10. That's what Jim Henson gave me when I was 5 on Sesame Street, or Mr. Rogers gave me on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, is to use your creativity and put good into this world. And that's all I hope that this book is doing, is this series is doing, is trying to do just that.
Brad, I got to tell you, your voice of positivity is needed more now than ever in history.
Amen.
And it's amazing.
For sure. And I'd like to say best book club Tuesday ever, you guys. get Brad's new book, I Am Sonia Sotomayor, available wherever books are sold. Brad, if we don't talk to you before the holidays, have a wonderful one, and we'll catch up with you in 2019. Thank you, my friend.
You know that. Love you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
K-Rock.
You guys remember the Brad Meltzer times?
Yeah.
He's
so much better than we are.
He's such an amazing voice for positive thinking, and it just makes you feel better about yourself and about the world.
We We need them.
Yep.
Hey, comedian Nikki Glaser coming up later on this morning's program. And we got more tickets you can win for the K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas shows Saturday.
Another round of Omaroki.
I don't think we're going to be doing that.
As we were zero for eight last time, no.
Oh, I'm glad you're in here because you're going to have something to contribute. We had a conversation yesterday. Allie was doing a segment on the next, what's it called? The Next Door?
Next Door. It's an app.
It's an app, and it connects neighborhoods together so that they can alert one another if there's somebody trying to break into cars or sketchy people on the lawn or something like that. And you read one that was a surprise to us that I think might lead us into an interesting conversation with our listeners.
Yeah, they wrote, so we've lived in our house for almost 3 years now. Our neighbor has called the cops on us for numerous stupid stuff, and they kind of go through a bunch of it. And then they said, well, last night was a new one. My husband and I were deep cleaning the tile and the grout in the sunroom last night. Our neighbor called the cops on us. Good Lord. Because the neighbor thought that they were cleaning up a homicide. We literally had three cops sneak up on us trying to catch us in the act. Is there anything that I can do at this point? They're accusing us of murder. They were cleaning the grout in their sunroom.
So the police show up and they go, well, the place looks pretty clean.
Right.
That's really all they could do, right?
Yeah.
Nothing nefarious was going on.
It's insane.
So we started talking about you called the cops on your neighbors, or better, the neighbors called the cops on you. And Omar, which one are you? What side of this
are you on? I called the fuzz on my neighbor. Because they were clearly cooking meth. So I was doing some work in my studio, and my studio is on the second floor, and you could see into their backyard.
Okay.
So I'm there, and I just happened to glance at the right moment, and I see the wife in a full Breaking Bad meth cooking outfit, including mask, going towards the corner of the yard.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Okay, do you live in the 909?
Yes, of course.
Well, yeah, then what do you expect? Then what's the problem?
It's a nice neighborhood in the 909.
That's what everyone says.
You wouldn't expect this in my neighborhood.
Right.
So she quickly, and by the way, she doesn't just like, you know, just kind of like walk out. She's kind of like lightly jogging. Like she wants to get out and grab whatever she needs, and then she kind of jogs back in. I'm thinking, what is up? So then I brought it to you guys if I should call the fuzz on them or not. And you guys said, no, don't call the fuzz. They're probably painting or whatever.
We said, why don't you go ask?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, but I'm not going to go ask meth dealers so they could kill me. No, no, no. So I call the fuzz, and I'm like thinking, well, I don't want to call on my cell phone because they're going to be able to trace it. What if the meth dealers are going to be able to find out who called the fuzz on them? So I had to
Why do you keep calling them the fuzz?
That's a great question.
This is 1965, Omar.
So I have to Google where I can find a payphone. So I go, I find a payphone that's about 5 miles away, and I call the fuzz and report it. But I don't know if the fuzz ever went down there to check it out or not.
Yeah,
but they're clearly cooking meth
or using pesticides or something that they didn't want
to make
get
meth.
Okay,
I mean you don't know that it was meth. Is my point?
But it was a crazy. Like I don't know.
That
man.
Is crazy.
It was.
And by the way, let me just ask you this: how different would it have been if you didn't have kids? Because
probably would have hit him up for some meth.
No, but I'm thinking I would sneak around and try to look maybe, in and see what they're doing.
You're right.
You know?
You're right. Yeah, totally right.
Yeah.
It's interesting. There are two different kinds of calls on your neighbors. One is like Omar's call where you're convinced they're doing something wrong, whether they are or not. And the other one is when you know they're doing something wrong, like the party's going on till 4 a.m.
Right.
And you can hear the loudness and stuff like that. I can't imagine you haven't had the neighbors call the cops on you, Kevin.
How dare you?
You're you.
How dare you, sir?
You are you, though.
How many times?
A lot.
fireworks?
Once.
Okay. I'm surprised it's only once.
I hide it pretty well.
Because Kevin is the a-hole in the neighborhood who's lighting off fireworks for a week before and a week after the 4th of July.
Define a-hole. I think I'm doing a public service to my neighbors.
Okay.
You're providing
they love
a big
that
show.
Noise.
Right. I'm putting on a show and they don't have to get in trouble. There was one time when my daughter was very small and she's not a quiet kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having swimming lessons, and she did not want to have a swimming lesson, and she was yelling. And we found out that the neighbors called the police because the police showed up. We were like, no, she's just taking swimming lessons. And they were like, oh, the neighbors had heard someone yelling, and they thought someone was in trouble. I was like, are you kidding
me? Some child abuse going on?
They didn't know.
Wow.
They just called 911 and said, hey, I think there's a problem.
really? And they have to come over.
Of course.
You can't blame the police.
But it was fine because they came in and were like, she's learning to swim.
By the way.
We wish she'd be a little more quiet too, but it's not a police thing.
But don't you appreciate that? In your neighborhood?
I mean...
I think I would.
I didn't at the time because there was nothing going on, so...
No, I know, but what if?
What if there was something going on?
Right. Don't you want a neighbor that has your back that way? I want to live next to somebody
like that. I
guess, but
it wasn't...
If they think, like, something murderous is going on...
But she wasn't screaming bloody murder.
Yeah,
she was
she's
just
yelling,
unhappy.
I don't want to go swimming.
Right.
I would take into consideration...
Also, I was toilet papering someone's house, and they called because they thought I was on the roof, and they thought that we were trying to break in. So they called the police.
How old are you?
last year.
No.
All right. So you called the police on a neighbor. They called the police on you. That's what we're looking for. I know that our listeners have stories. I know this is perfect for you guys. 1-800-520-1067. Kevin, Anaheim, you please hang on. We'll get to you first when we return. All the calls coming up next on K-Rock.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show, K-Rock.
Let's take one phone call. You called the neighbors on your, the police on your neighbors, or they called the police on you? Kevin in Anaheim, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. Bong, bong to you.
To you as
bong,
well.
Bong, bong indeed. Now, I don't know why you're calling, but my guess is since your name is Kevin,
how
that the neighbors
you?
Called the cops on you.
Absolutely, and because I like to uphold the Kevin tradition of the name. You know, that's very important to me.
All right, what did they think was going on and what was going on?
They thought I was doing bad things with pets in my backyard, and I tell you, it's not what you're thinking, Kevin. It's I've got three basset hounds.
Okay.
And they're 10, 3, and 4, and they thought I was dog fighting. They thought I was holding a dog fighting match in my backyard, so they called the cops on me. They couldn't look over the damn fence and be like, hey, Kevin, what are you doing? Oh, playing with my dogs with my two kids and my wife. But no, they called the cops, and like three cop cars showed up and with four cops. In my front yard.
Can I just say that a basset hound dog fighting ring would
worst.
Be the worst dog fighting ring
it
ever.
Too. I thought it. They're just constantly going, oh,
yeah, chasing each other and their ears get in the way. You know, they're built super low and they're built for speed. So, you know, they're not too mean.
No,
oh, that's
that
funny.
Is, and you must have been so surprised when all those police cars showed up.
Yeah, you would have thought I was murdering somebody in my backyard, you know?
Seriously. All right, Kevin, great call. We appreciate you, sir. Talking about the fuzz, you guys.
We're not talking about the fuzz.
Or no, really
at all.
Talking about the popo, talking about the 5-0. You called the police on your neighbors, or they called the police on you. 1-800-520-1067. Oh, we have some fun calls. Do not leave. Stephanie. LBC, line 4, up first here on the Kevin and Bean Show. I love this.
Hey, Stephanie.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. What happened?
So I want to preempt this call to let you guys know that I grew up in the Marine Corps, so I'm an ex-military brat.
Okay.
So I was pretty sheltered growing up, so I never really had conversations that were above my age range. So when I was about 10, 11 or so, I heard a lot of weird noises coming from upstairs. And there's noises that were pretty foreign. So when I went upstairs and I knocked on my parents' bedrooms, my mom said that they're wrestling with their shirts off, my parents. So when I think wrestling, I think fighting. So I panicked, thought my dad was beating up my mom.
Oh,
and
no.
So when they came, because they
oh, wait, the cops.
When the cops
the
came?
Cops.
The cops.
Okay.
Yeah, the cops. The Marine Corps police. So I call them, and about 10 of them show up, because my dad's pretty high ranking, and they take it very seriously. My parents had explained to them that they were upstairs having sex, and that was the first
fun.
I ever got the birds and the bees conversation.
I don't feel like that's how you want that conversation
no.
to go.
No, not at all. Really, I got in big trouble for that.
Your dad was not beating up your mom, but he was wrecking her.
Oh,
yeah, definitely. Taking
okay.
her to pound town.
You are
Stephanie.
I'm so glad that you're able to laugh about it now rather than be scarred for the rest of your life. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Stephanie just said he was taking her to Pound Town. I don't know if you caught that.
Yes, she did.
Good God.
That was the best.
This one from the 714. I was at a bridal shower. We were. By the way, we're all thinking of Ali's parents right now.
I know,
of course.
I hate it so much.
I was at a bridal shower. We were playing a game that involved popping balloons. We were laughing and having a great time, only to find the sheriff and three officers knocking on the front door because the neighbor thought the balloons were gunshots and that the laughing was screams.
Oh.
They probably thought they were going to be walking into a bloodbath, and instead they found about 15 ladies in onesies. So that's not what they expected. All right, Kevin, we only have time for one more. Who's your favorite? What
Boy,
do you
like? I don't know. Let's try David because this may be the most extreme one. Hi, David of Van Nuys.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, thank you.
So it was a crazy story. We were small with my brothers, and apparently our parents and my grandma were, like, disputing with the neighbors. So one day when my mom left to work, left my grandma taking care of us in the guest house. So the neighbor called the police and said that my family was trafficking kids and putting them in the backyards, and SWAT team showed up at our house.
Oh, so that was just out of spite. Yeah. They didn't really think anything was going on. They just hated your family?
No, they did it. Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
I mean, it was just an argument that kept going. So SWAT team showed up, and then grandma told him, oh, I'm watching them. It's not like that. And, you know, it was crazy. I mean, he had
a
truck that said SWAT parked in front of the house.
Listen,
that's
Mom.
Great use of police resources.
This is going to sound bad, Mom, but listen, SWAT was just here.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so, you know, we're coyotes trafficking kids, and it's crazy.
That's some good babysitting right there. All right, David, thanks for listening.
The Kevin and Bean Show, the world famous K-Rock.
Allie McKay is here. It's time for What's Happening, and then right after, Allie, you're going to be inviting your listeners to call in for some dream interpretation.
Yes.
Allie's good at this.
I just like to help people through their subconscious. Mm-hmm. They're dreaming things. They don't know what it means. Maybe I can tap into some deeper hidden meanings that they're not thinking about.
And what was your training in this field?
Nothing. Just one day.
You did this professionally for many years, though, right?
Never, no. We were just chatting off the air one day, and I said what one dream was or something. You're like, wait a minute, what? That almost sounds like it could be right.
I mean, you sound pretty confident.
Yeah.
You
oh, yeah.
Do. So we assumed it was a former job or something.
Yeah.
All right. So if you would like a dream interpreted, you've had something running through your mind while you're sleeping and you don't know what it means, Allie is here to answer for you.
1-800-520-1067. I love you.
Thank you, Doe. And your interpretation is legally binding, right, Allie?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So call now, 1-800-520-1067.
Call now, 1-800-520-1067. I love you.
Thank you, Doe. And we'll take your calls right after the top of the hour. First, what else is happening?
A lot is happening with these fires. It seems like there's no end in sight. Just
sure
when
does.
You think they've got a hold on it. I mean, an ember just sparks something else in an area that you thought there's nothing else to burn. It is insane. But some people are doing their best to help people out, like Blink-182. They're selling a new Cali relief tea with 100% of the proceeds being donated to the Red Cross Disaster Relief Fund. And just last night, perhaps you might know him, Mr. Dave Grohl from Foo Fighters.
Sure.
Decided that he would head on over to Fire Station 68 in Calabasas.
He baked them some cookies?
He brought his own Backbeat barbecue.
Did he?
And he supplied barbecue for all of the firefighters. There are 8,000 fire crews that have been dispatched to combat the blaze. And he thought, you know what? Let me just head on over to this fire station.
Wow.
Make some barbecue for the dudes. So he recently minted it, Backbeat Barbecue, but that's like his barbecue company. We were talking about this our last day at the Venice building when I had said, oh, so what are you going to be doing now that you're not touring that much? And he said, barbecuing. And I said, what do you mean? And he told me, we've talked about this. He has studied under these master barbecuers, learning all the differences with smoking and what kind of barbecue he wants to do. It's his absolute passion. And to
That's
bring
awesome.
That over to the firefighters and let them enjoy that. Like, oh, guys, just got back to the station. You know, maybe they're going to take a little break before they're sent out again. What did you do? Oh, we had Dave Grohl from Foo Fighters come and made barbecue for us. It's just awesome.
He's the best dude in the world.
It's not bad. He is not bad.
By the way, that special edition Blink shirt for charity that you mentioned, we do have a link to that available at krock.com if you want to check it out.
Excellent. Sandra Bullock also doing her part. She made a $100,000 donation to the Humane Society of Ventura County to help provide care for animals that have been evacuated in the California wildfire. So
that's wonderful.
Doing her thing. And I think that's something we don't talk about all that much are how overrun now shelters are with animals. Shelters that had been full with animals that they need to get out and get adopted. So if by any chance you have been thinking about getting a pet, now's the time to do it. Because
or
not
even
only
just to foster one for a few days or a few weeks.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you can open up your home to a pet, like Bean said, just to foster one, that's perfect.
I could not do a foster one just because you fall in love with them and you go,
you wind up keeping them.
It's my dog. What are you talking about? It's my dog. This is not a, I'm not doing that. I'm not fostering.
Yeah. But now is the time.
And also, let me just say this because I remember my my years living in Santa Clarita where I had some acreage up there. If you're one of those people who does have room for big animals, contact the Humane Society and find out if they need a place for horses or for cows or for llamas or for pigs, because there are a lot of animals being moved around to a lot of different places right now. And you're right, it seems like a low priority compared to all the human damage that's being inflicted. Those animals need someplace to go too.
Absolutely. So good on you, all you people willing to take a little animal into your house. I like it. Some birthdays for you. Jimmy Kimmel, Gerard Butler, Meta World Peace, and Whoopi Goldberg, and that's what's happening.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show. K-Rock.
Allie McKay, Dream Interpreter.
Like a pickle? Why can't my boobs get bigger?
Allie Dream Interpreter.
Wow! Don't pull out.
Allie Dream Interpreter.
Smell it.
Allie Dream Interpreter. Come on now, Allie.
Suck it. None of that goes.
What?
None of that has to do with dreaming.
We talked about it. It's all good.
It is? Okay. All right.
I'm very confused by the choices Omar makes.
All right. I think that's what we have to pay him to get him to do an intro.
Uh-huh.
He has to be able to insult us.
Got it.
Gotcha. Let's start with Line 5, Huntington Beach. This is going to be Kaylee, and I wanted to bring her up first because this is a very, as I understand, Allie, and you're the expert here, this is a very common dream, and it might be a good way to introduce the segment here today.
Okay.
All right. Hi, Kaylee.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
All right, so my dream is always reoccurring, but my teeth, they just start falling out, all of them.
Yeah.
Teeth start falling out.
That is an extremely common dream, and it has to do with a loss of confidence or power. So something is going on in your life that's making you a little bit insecure about something, and it's manifesting in your dreams as your teeth falling out.
Wow.
Right. Blew your mind, didn't I, Kaylee?
Sorry to disappoint you. But it sounds like you need to identify whatever it is she's
feeling a bit
over,
insecure
right?
about. Yeah, whatever it is, you're maybe a lack of confidence in some area of your life.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Kaylee, thank you for listening. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to Chris, please. Line 2, he's in North Hollywood, 1-800-520-1067. If you want some quick dream interpretation, Allie is here for you.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, Bean. Good morning.
So, Kevin and Allie are here as well. Go ahead.
Okay. So my dream is I'm at this party, and all my, like, I know a lot of people who are there. My friends are there, and I'm getting very warm reception from everyone. And then all of a sudden, like, Donald Trump is there.
Oh.
But he's much younger and much more handsome, and I'm kind of, who I don't like, by the way. But I'm very stricken by how handsome he is and how good he looks, and I have to tell him how good your hair looks. And I say, Donald, your hair looks very good. Your hair looks great today. And this has happened 2 or 3 times.
What? How young does Donald Trump have to be when his hair looked good?
I know.
What is he, 15?
Really? What are your thoughts on that one?
Well, here's the thing. You said that you are not necessarily a fan of Donald Trump, correct?
Correct, yeah.
So maybe you've also seen in instances with Donald Trump that when you say something nice to him, you compliment him, that type of thing, good things tend to happen to those people. In real life, that's what happens. You're nice to him, you respect him, that type of thing. He tends to give you a position of power.
Okay.
So you are thinking you're catching him young enough that if you give him all these accolades, good things will be bestowed upon you.
Look at that.
Wow.
Turn your life around if you can figure out a way to make that work in real life. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate the call, sir. Let's try Jacob, please. Glendora, line six. This one, I thank God you're here as the expert, Allie, because I have no idea how to help Jacob.
Okay.
Hey, Jacob.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, thank you. What's your dream?
So pretty much what happened, this dream kind of happened when I was younger, but normal day at my house, you know, nothing that crazy, and all of a sudden dinosaurs started popping up, like, nothing scary. It's not like they come over and be like, ah, and start biting you, but they just kind of would, like, pop up and just kind of hang out, like...
They pop up and just want to hang out.
Well,
like dinosaurs do.
Here's the thing with dinosaurs. Dinosaurs represent something old, something outdated. So it could be maybe you're trying to change your thoughts, trying to maybe discard old habits. Or, and this is kind of sad because you said you've been having this since you were a kid, but dinosaurs could also be meaning that maybe you don't find yourself useful anymore.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of insulting, but
that's
right.
What I'm saying. By
look,
the fact
the truth
that,
hurts.
The fact that you were a kid.
I was calling for help, but Allie's just over here just hurting my feelings now.
I'm just saying, dinosaurs are, they represent something outdated, old, so maybe you want to either change your ways, or since you were a kid when this was happening, maybe you were switching up the house, maybe you were getting new carpet or furniture.
Well, I mean, puberty was kicking in, so that could have been possible.
Right, right. Mm. The bees were dropping, you know what I'm saying? Outdated
bees. The
bees
are dropping, dinosaurs popping out, you know, the usual.
I'm picking up what you're putting down, Jacob.
I like that you're now backtracking to try to make him feel better about how useless he is.
Why not change it?
Thank you for the call, Jacob. Here's one from the text. Same number, 1-800-520-1067. Maybe you can help this one. Allie, I clean swimming pools for a living, and I keep having this dream where I'm on vacation on a cruise ship, but while I'm on vacation, I still have to clean the pool on the ship. What's that about?
Yeah, first of all, don't dream about cruises. That means you're going to be murdered. Okay. We all know this.
I think that's only you.
Okay, I'm sorry. That was only
me. No one has ever gone on a cruise ship that wasn't murdered, Kevin. Why don't you watch the news sometime?
Thank you.
Accurate. Okay.
Here's the thing. If you are constantly cleaning, and that's your job, but then even when you're supposed to be relaxing and kind of taking care of you time, but you're still cleaning, that means there's an aspect of your life that you feel isn't tidy, that you need to figure out and fix, because you can't even relax in any shape or form without trying to fix. You're a fixer, and sometimes you just have to let things go, but also murder, right?
Especially murder.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Okay. I'm very confused.
All right, let's do one more, and let's make it Joe. He's in Los Angeles, line two, up next on the Kevin and Bean Show. I can't wait to find out the answer to this one. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Kevin, Bean, Allie, how you guys doing?
Hey. We're good. What's going on?
Come on, man. You all right? You good?
Well, so I've been having these reoccurring dreams lately, and they've been going actually for a while. I've been having dreams about, like, my ex-girlfriends.
How many ex-girlfriends does Joe have? All.
I don't want to say. I've been having dreams that I'm either having a sexual fantasy with them, or they're trying to persuade me to have sex with them.
Are you sure you're not awake when you're having this dream?
No.
All right, Joe, here's the thing. Reoccurring dreams tend to have the same theme. They're reoccurring because it's something that you're not acknowledging in the present, in your present mind when you're awake. It's something that you keep kind of pushing to the back, so it's stressing you out. So you're not acknowledging something with all of these women. Maybe. Joe, could you like dudes?
Hello?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, that might be something you want to look into, that maybe you're not acknowledging these ex-girlfriends and it's stressing you out because there's something deeper. They keep coming into your life to show you that none of them were for you.
Right. Try some penis, Joe.
Yeah, try some D. It's great.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling. Hope we were able to help everyone.
Allie Dream Interpreter.
Why can't my boobs get bigger?
Allie Dream Interpreter. Woo!
It's Kevin and Bean on K-Rock. KROQ.
I was just thinking, we've had thousands of guests over the years doing this program. I don't remember the last time we had one who raced from a radio show to get to here to be a guest on our show. She raced from her own program to join us in studio here at K-Rock. But ladies and gentlemen, Nikki Glaser is here.
Hello.
On the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Nikki, welcome back.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for having me back.
Congratulations on your new SiriusXM show. What makes you a very popular and successful stand-up comedian and television personality want to get up at the crack of ass and do your own morning radio show?
I don't know. I think I just, I don't know. I've always loved radio, and I've become pretty well-versed in it and I think good at it because I just promote shows on the road all the time. And I just, and it's a medium also where you don't need to wear, like, makeup and look great every day. And I think as an aging woman.
Yeah, we wanted to talk to you about that, actually, Nikki.
I resent that. I just, as an aging woman in this business, I was like, I want to get into radio. Because
Wait, you're an aging woman?
Yes.
In this business,
yes. In this business.
Really?
Sadly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every day it's like a new thing. I just discover something new I hate about the way I look. And I'm like, I want to get into something where looks don't really matter that much. And but the thing is, now they do because everyone has cameras in studio.
That's true.
And then you take pictures after the show that you have to put it on your socials. So I still have to wear hair and makeup and do that stuff. But it's less about that. And yeah, I moved to New York City so that I could do my show later because it's 3 hours later.
So
I figured out I could sleep in 3 more hours. And so
Very
I do it every
smart.
Day from 10 to noon in New York.
I don't want to brag, guys, but I am in the Central Time Zone for very similar reasons right now. So
yeah.
I hear what you're saying, Nikki. Now, have you gotten to interview people that you admire or were excited to talk to doing your own radio show?
Yeah, I mean, Tiffany Amber Thiessen was one of them that I was really excited about. She obviously was Kelly Kapowski from Saved by the Bell. So, like, people like that just... Because I'm at the Sirius building, so there's a lot of celebrities doing press tours, and I'm just one of the stops. So you just get sent a list of names every day that, like, do you want this person? Do you want this person? And she was one that was, like, so exciting to meet. Just a lot of supermodels I like meeting. I like meeting just, like, I like meeting models because they're not that interesting, but they're so beautiful, and I just like to talk to them about, like, what's it like to be a model? I really find them...
What's it like being so attractive?
Yeah, what's it like to have everything that matters about you be totally physical? And because it is a sad life because obviously we all age and then that goes away. And I'm fascinated by, like, what are you going to do when you age? And they don't really think about it is what I've found. They don't have a plan.
I can see that. Who wants to think about that?
You got to have a plan.
Of course.
It's going to happen.
Of course. Nikki, do these models that come by your show enjoy your line of questioning?
They don't care for it. They really don't want to think about those things. But I always think about I used to have dogs. I got rid of my dogs. But when I had dogs, and by the way,
don't
I didn't
say it like
yeah,
that.
Don't
what do you mean you got
like
rid
that.
Of them?
You,
well, they went to live
parents.
On a farm.
Right. I didn't kill them, but I gave them to my parents to kill. So they're going to take care of it. Send me the invoice. But When I had dogs, I got dogs and I couldn't stop thinking about, like, oh my God, I'm going to see these things die someday. I can't believe that. And people go, why would you think about that? And I go, I don't know, because I plan on living 11 more years. Like, it's going to happen.
That's reality.
That's sort of a weird way to look at it.
But
though.
It's true.
It's
but
sort, you're
but
right,
you are,
except for most people are just like, let's enjoy it now.
Yeah, I know. I'm not one of those people. And I don't, I'm not one of these people that's like, I just want my dogs to outlive me. And I'm just going to, I want to live long enough to walk my dogs down the aisle and see them into their next life. Like, no, you're going to see them die. I like to have control over those things. I like to have a plan. Like, for my dogs, I used to just pick up my dog, Marion, and tell her, like, I'm going to kill you someday. I used to, like, say it like that because she likes when I talk to her like that. But
Does
the
she?
Truth is, I am going to kill her someday. If I get her back, someday, if everything goes well, where there's not a freak accident, or she doesn't get hit by a car, or hit by a coyote, or whatever, a coyote takes a hit out on her, then I will reach a point where someday I will bring her into the vet, and it will be me telling the vet, like... Finish her.
But that's
or
a horrible
say,
thing.
You know?
Finish her.
I mean,
that's a horrible thing to focus on throughout those 11 years.
I don't focus on it all the time, but I just want to wrap my head around it because it will happen, and I
but
like.
But it's
to
very
be
upsetting
prepared.
For your dog to hear, Nikki. I mean, come on.
But
at least
I
you can
say
keep it to
like
yourself.
This: I'm going to kill you someday. And she goes, she doesn't even know what I'm saying. Her tail's all wagging. I go, I hate you. You're ugly and a burden on my life. I'm going to give you away in a couple months. I literally moved to New York City with. So I had two. I got two dogs when I was living in LA.
What size? What were they?
They're tiny. Okay. You know, like one is 20 pounds, the other is like 6 pounds. And I, all I had to do when they had to go to the bathroom was like, you know, walk them once or twice a day. But it was like very easy, and I would have dog walkers to supplement. And then also I would just open my back door and they would go out in the yard and they come back in. It was just like a great relationship. And then I moved to New York City, and I moved in January, and I moved to a 4-floor walk up. So every time they had to go outside to go pee, you walk up and down 4 flights of stairs. And after about 2 weeks of that, I kind of started fantasizing about them passing away, like sooner than later. I hated myself for it, because these dogs were my life. I loved these dogs.
But it sounds like it.
Every time I closed my eyes, I would be like, when are they going to die? When am I going to be free? Like,
I think it's okay that you're not a pet owner now.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And that's probably a good move. We can go out on a limb and safely say, you're not getting those dogs back.
I know. They are living the best life. I called my parents because I was really like, TikTok, guys, when is this going to go? And I wasn't going to do anything drastic, but I will say we were spending a little bit more time on the balcony. You know, accidents do happen.
Sure.
You are
Nikki. I was going to some dark places. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I have to have these another 10 years. And I never thought I would think this way, because I love these dogs more than I could ever think I would.
Well,
you're
a huge animal lover,
it sounds
too.
Like it.
I am a huge animal lover. But then I got rid of the dogs. So my mom came to New York, and she took them back to St. Louis, and people were checking in on me. They were like, are you going to be okay? They're bringing casseroles by the house. Like, I've just suffered this great loss. And I had to kind of play it up like, you know, it's really hard. But in all honesty, from the second they left, I have been living life like Casey Anthony. Like, it was the best decision of my life. I got my life back. No regrets. And I know that is a terrible thing to say. My dogs are very much alive.
It's not as bad as Casey Anthony.
But I really, I know that people go, how could she be in these wet t-shirt contests after? And it's like, no, this bitch had felt freedom again. And I related to it, and I hate to say that I relate to it, but I do relate to it. And that is why I've decided to never have children.
That's probably
that's
also
very
a good choice.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I'm getting my tubes tied.
Let's pause on a happy note, shall we?
Yeah.
Is there one? Nikki Glaser is here. The show is Monday through Thursdays from 7 to 9 on Comedy Central Radio. That's SiriusXM Channel 95 if you want to check out Nikki. Quick break. More with our guests right after this on K-Rock.
Kevin and Bean on K-Rock. KROQ.
Nikki Glaser in studio with us now on the Kevin and Bean Show. She is here not to promote any stand-up for a change, right, Nikki? You don't have any current local dates happening?
Oh, I have tons of dates all over the place, like NikkiGlaser.com. I'm touring the country every single weekend for the next 6 months of my life leading up to a Netflix special taping, so I'm really building my hour right now. But, I'm really here to... I have a radio show that I do every single day, Monday through Thursday, on Sirius Channel 95 from 10 to 12 Eastern.
Fantastic. Yeah. 7 to 9 for us.
7 to 9 for you.
Since the last time we saw you, I hear you, I didn't follow it closely, but I assume you won Dancing with the Stars, right?
Yes, I got first voted off. So
in a way, it's first.
Sure. I got first in some sort of way. Yes, I was on Dancing with the Stars on the current season. The funniest thing is I've been kicked off this show now for 2 months, and the show is still on the air.
Lord.
And I was a cast member on a show that is currently on the air, and it's just, it feels so far removed because I was immediately asked to leave, but
before you danced?
Oh God, no. Directly after, they couldn't have gotten me off any quicker.
Why did you want to do it, Nikki? I don't know you, but it doesn't seem like the type of thing that would be in your comfort zone.
It was the most, and that's why I wanted to do it, was because I have never been more terrified to do anything in my life. I can't imagine anything I'd rather not do. I'm a vegan, and I was thinking about it. I'd rather slaughter an animal on live television than dance on television, because I have never danced before in my life. Terribly ashamed of how bad I am at dancing. I was ashamed at a young age. I like did a dance once for my mom in my kitchen, and I remember my mom being like, you're bad at dancing, like you have no natural talent.
Aww.
Just like, she was just like calling what it was, because I don't
speaking truth.
I literally have none. And everyone leading up to this, because I told the producers, I was like, I don't have any dance experience. And they're like, you can probably figure it out. I get there, and my dance partner, by the way, is named Gleb Sevchenko. He is the hottest man that's ever talked to me, let alone, like, danced with me.
That's comfortable.
It was awesome. But when he first met me, he was like, oh, okay. Like, I look like I could baby dance.
Of course,
fit.
You do.
I look like I might be have been a ballerina at one point. Like, I present as someone who is fit and physically capable of dancing.
Absolutely.
And then I started dancing, and he told me later on, he was like, oh, no. Like, he went home from the first rehearsal
really?
And talked to his wife, who is a choreographer on So You Think You Can Dance. So they're both dancers. And he told her, like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
I'm in trouble.
He's done every iteration of the show. The show is in 52 different countries, and he's done a bunch of different versions of the show across the world. And he said he's never had a challenge quite like mine. He's never met someone. He said he's never met someone who worked harder than me, but he's never met someone who has no natural ability quite like I had. And he told me,
wow.
He was like, you dance like a robot. And I was like, that's not nice. And I started crying. Like, why is he told? Because he would just say really insulting things, not knowing that they were insulting because he's Russian. And, like, they're just very cold and harsh and
right.
just call it like it is. And he would tell me, you dance like a robot. And I was like, Gleb, that is not nice. And he was like, and then he spun it. He was like, no, but I can reprogram you because no one's ever. And I was like, yeah. But he could not. I mean, I was terrible. What took other dancers literally minutes to learn? Like, other people on the show who have a little dance experience took me a month to learn one dance. Like, I was really,
wow.
really bad.
So you knew from the beginning that you were probably going to be booted quickly.
I told everyone. I said, I'm the worst dancer that anyone's ever seen. And everyone goes, no, you're not. And then I got started dancing, and they go, okay, you were right. You're really bad
you were
at
not
this.
Not exaggerating.
But
were
I
you
say,
grateful to be sent home, or were you still
no,
a little bit hurt?
I was so deeply hurt.
You were hurt.
Because after doing it a month, I learned one dance, and I was like, okay, now I've learned how to dance. Because I had to learn how to learn. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know anything. And then once I started learning the second and third dance, because you start learning dances before the show, before you even know you're going to be around to do that dance. You
right.
start preparing for them. And then I was like, okay, I can learn quicker now. And I really had some potential. And I know they had to eliminate someone. And I was the first to go. And I really signed up for the show thinking, like, the worst thing that could happen would be I'm the first voted off. But I go, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to be the first of all, there's a blind woman in the competition. So certainly I'm not going to be the worst dancer. And they determined I was the first to go. I think I would have done better had I been blind because I couldn't learn from my partner because he was so hot. I would just get distracted.
You're just distracted. Yeah.
He would be talking to me and I would be like, Gleb, you're so hot. I just have to tell you right now, like, look how hot you are. And he'd be like, I'm trying to teach you. And I'm like, I just need you to know. And he's like, how do I respond to that? I'm like, just take it in. Like, you're so hot. If you don't know what Gleb Savchenko
What's
looks like.
What's his name?
His name is Gleb Savchenko. Savchenko.
Right.
He is as hot as his name is
That's
disgusting.
Very
sexy. So those are equivalents. He was so hot. I got to dance with this guy 4 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 30 days leading up to the live performance.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been off the show for 2 months now. I'm still drying out, if you know what I'm saying.
Understood, yes.
Saturated for a month. Saturated.
Do you think you would have made it further if you had an uglier instructor?
I probably would have, because I was literally... he turned me into a Samantha. Do you know what I'm saying by that? Like, I always really resonated with a Carrie on Sex and the City, but then when I was around Gleb, every single thing he said, I'd be like, and I need that inside me, Gleb. And he'd be like, that's not professional. I literally was such a horn dog around this guy. I was so gross, and I really apologize to Gleb and everyone who had to witness it. But I was scared I was going to slip during the performance because
we understand.
We get it.
There's moisture. Yeah,
we got it. You got it. That I was really my
right.
dew point
no,
was.
We,
oh, okay. I can
understood.
Stop talking
okay,
now.
Okay, thank you.
Great.
So that was the Dancing with the Stars.
That was my experience.
At least you were eliminated before someone named Grocery Joe. At least that happened, right?
Grocery Store Joe was by far, he was the guy that we were both like, what are we doing here? We're the worst dancers by far.
Were you gambling on which one would go home first?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just thought, it was kind of like between us.
Right.
I mean, we were definitely the first to go. It was going to be one of us. And he just only got eliminated last night. So
oh, wow.
He went
That's
really,
hurtful.
Really far.
You must have been awful.
I was terrible. I was really bad, but I now am like going to start taking dance lessons. Like, it really taught me that I love dancing, and it really does bring you joy when you dance.
No,
like, it's therapeutic.
Aww.
It's good for, I suffer with depression. It was good for my depression. Like, it feels good to move your body to music. There's a reason people do it. It is so beneficial in so many ways, but I got really super injured during it, right before it, and that really messed things up. I being eliminated from the show was one of the hardest things I've ever been through.
Really? Wow.
It was really disappointing. You just don't think it's going to happen. You don't think you're going to be standing on stage with a spotlight on you, having Tom Bergeron say the first voted off, and then that long pause of the dun dun. Like, I was on a reality show. It was such a wild experience. And then I cried.
If I understand correctly, Nikki, you were not dry at the end of rehearsal, too.
Because she was crying, right?
Right, right. I was saturated from tip to from head to toe.
Yep.
Before we run out of time, and unfortunately, this isn't satellite, so we really do unfortunately have to go. We do have 60 seconds with Nikki Glaser again, Monday through Thursday from 7 to 9, Comedy Central Radio, Sirius XM Channel 95. Kevin is going to fire a bunch of questions at you. You got 60 seconds to answer. First thing that comes to your mind, Nikki.
Great.
You ready?
60 seconds with Nikki Glaser.
I love this.
What were you like in high school?
Quiet but funny.
What's the worst TV show you like?
The worst TV show I like. I can't skip. Sorry, I don't have one.
Dog kisses on the mouth. Yes or no?
Yes.
What's the worst job you've ever had?
Working at a salon where I cried because I overcharged someone and I got yelled at, and I never went back to collect my paycheck because I was so embarrassed at having done such a bad job. So they still owe me money.
That's the longest answer so far.
Sorry.
It's all right. Do you have any secret talents?
Yeah, I can like do prayer hands behind my back.
Behind my back. Okay.
Yes. We assume that's what you're doing.
And wiggle my ears.
Mustaches. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What fashion trend do you just not get?
I don't get, I don't like, skip. Sorry, I don't
skip,
know.
Okay.
God, I'm terrible at this.
What's something people...
Oh, God. TV show I watch that I'm embarrassed by.
That might take a little too much time. I should take that one off the list, probably.
Yeah, I just don't,
it's not
I don't
a
watch
rapid fire.
Any TV. I listen to podcasts and listen to ASMR videos.
ASMR videos, you
yeah,
do that.
You know about that,
oh,
right?
Sure.
Oh,
yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
That's your jam?
Oh, my God. Hold on. I'm falling asleep.
Hey, Nikki, thanks a lot for coming by. We really enjoyed seeing you again.
Thank you for having me. It's been so good being here, you guys.
Good luck,
really
you guys.
I love you. Thank you.
Okay, next time. Bye-bye.
Kevin, tell us about what else we need to know.
The SoCal Helpful Honda dealers are handing out random acts of helpfulness. We all win with a commercial-free drive home today at 5 o'clock. Tomorrow morning, an all-new Kevin and Bean show. We have animal stories. We have tickets to the K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas. And we have Thanks for That Info, Bean.
How dare you.
Tomorrow.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show.
K-Rock. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.